Well, tonight, let's pretend that we have the money to start our own news media outlet. What do you guys think? Huh? What would it take to thoroughly cover the news that matters to Chicago with quality? What are we talking about? We're talking about millions of reporters? Maybe video only, right? Maybe user input? Drones? Get drones in the action? We saw what good reporting could do in real life with DNA Info, which had deployed a slew of reporters to walk the beat, if you will, telling the stories of the neighborhoods. This was an award-winning venture that had become a trusted routine part of the Chicago news ecosystem till it was abruptly ended by Joe Ricketts. He was the guy who was owning, I guess he was the benefactor and the money. Since that time, the dailies and other media outlets have tried to sell or tell those stories as best they could, but even they would tell you that it's next to impossible to give local coverage to everything in this day and age when media resources are at a premium. Enter Block Club Chicago. Three DNA regulars have started a new digital enterprise to pick up where DNA Info left off. How are they planning to do what many have tried before? And is it time for us to face the facts that if you want your news, quality news, drone news, you're going to have to pay for it? But that's not all. When Block Club announced that they were starting up shop, they opened up a Kickstarter and set a goal for $25,000. To this day, with 15 days remaining, they have hit that goal and more, raising $139,000. Wow. Brings up another great question. Can you crowdfund the news? In studio with me tonight to talk about Block Club Chicago and all these issues, the future of local news, Seamus Toomey, the editor-in-chief of Block Club Chicago, Stephanie Lule, who's the managing editor, and Jen Sabella, the director of strategy. You guys, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Yes.
What
thanks.
A whirlwind week. I mean, it's been a little bit more than a week that was announced that you guys were coming out, and what a tremendous, tremendous outpouring of support. I mean, were you guys surprised of all the people that have come out of the woodwork, not just the Kickstarter, but people coming out wishing you well?
You know, we knew it was going to be a feel-good story when it came out, because so many people had told us how much they liked DNA and how much they missed it right when we closed. So we suspected it was going to go pretty well, but we really had no idea, for one, that the Kickstarter was going to blow up like it did. People were just sharing it like crazy, and you know, a lot of $25 donations, $50 donations, some hundred, well, you know, some bigger ones. Thank you, everyone that contributed. But yeah, I mean, we're at like 2,500 people, individual people, wow, have backed it and signed up for a subscription. So it's been overwhelming.
It really is. Something that Chicago needs. When you guys obviously were part of DNA Info abruptly closing up shop, did you right away say, you know what, I'm not going to stop this mission. I'm going to continue. This is something we want to do. Or did it take a couple drunken nights for you guys to go, you know what, I got an idea? How did it come about that you guys dove headfirst into this project?
I was like, we got to do this. I mean, like, I know, once I talked to everyone, like, the three of us were like, yeah, we got to do this. I actually had another job at the time, and I was, like, there, and I was like, I have to do something to get it back. It was just weighing on me, and I'm like, now is the time. Like, people are going to miss it. The people are still here. There's a lot of support right now. And also, just people came out of the woodwork being like, we want to help you. We want to help you get funding. Let us know, like, what we can do for you. And I was like, you know, we have to talk, you know, right now the door is open for us to do something. So we decided to take a leap.
Mm-hmm. There were a couple drunken nights, though.
Yes. There were. Yeah.
Stephanie, same question to you, and especially when you talk about, I don't want to call it an addiction, but this idea that, you know, there is a calling to this kind of work, especially when you're in a newsroom and you're doing something that is successful and you're covering the stories of Chicago. It's hard to walk away with that, especially when it traumatic way that it ended.
Yeah, and listen, it's fun to do the news. You know this, right? But I will say, like, the work that we were doing at DNA Info felt so important, because, you know, we were seeing aldermen being covered for the first time ever, not knowing how to respond to a reporter showing up, local school councils, things like that. You know, a lot of these neighborhoods and aldermen and the people of power in the neighborhoods were being covered for the first time ever. And we had to keep that going, of course.
Yeah, that's amazing. You think about that. That's so many times that the people who might be in power or people who have never been covered before, had to interact with a reporter. You know, they're sitting there eating their sandwich, and they're like, this is my life, and here comes the DNA info saying, hey, what's this question about this? Why are all these tires in the playground? And, you know, they're stumbling and bumbling trying to figure out that, oh, yes, they are accountable after all.
Right, and we sort of took it from a different angle. You know, as opposed to covering stuff once it reached City Hall, we tried to get it at the neighborhood level when the alderman first proposed it to, you know, 10 people in the coffee shop, or the developer, you know, was speaking to the condo development next door. And, you know, I always felt like you get a much less varnished, you know, presentation at that point when it's at the entry level. Plus, you can sort of get to stuff before, you know, before it's a done deal. So we were always excited about that. Going out to, you know, CAPS meetings where, you know, sometimes there would be 10 people at the CAPS meetings, but the commander would be there talking, you know, giving real answers to questions from real people. It wasn't just sort of a canned press release, this happened. You know, you'd have the woman on the house on the corner asking, hey, what happened last night? And, you know, the commander knows, you know, what happened. So he would give the full story, and we would be there, you know, writing it all down in the corner.
Jen, there's also something interesting about the way the media works. A lot of times, those people in power, as you just mentioned, Stephanie, they may be close-lipped, or they may be in no-comment form because of the media that's approaching them and the way that it's glossed over, or it might just be they know that it's going to be not a hit piece, but they know it's going to be something that has already bubbled up to this point, so no comment. I would assume that having ground-level beat reporters be able to be there to hear their stories, to hear their point of view, to understand from the ground level what a story is they're trying to do or what they're trying to accomplish, might actually help when it comes to getting their story or being able to tell a story about what's happening in a neighborhood.
Definitely. And I think that another thing about that is our reporters were there all the time. So if it was an alderman wanted to get a story out about, you know, a coat drive, we would do that story. And no one else is going to do that story. And they knew that. So they knew that they're going to call us back and they're going to give us, you know, the drawings of the architecture plan of a development that's coming up, and they will, you know, answer the questions. It's a little bit of give and take. It's like that in, you know, reporting in general. But yeah, showing up, and you, like Seamus said, when you have to answer the lady in the corner and a reporter sitting there, you can't BS the lady in the corner.
Yeah, right?
She's not going to be there for it. So the reporter in the room, I mean, I think at first we got kicked out of some meetings and we had to be like, hey, First Amendment, y'all. But people would be like, you can't be here. And we're like, yeah, we can. But just no one had showed up in
they
so many years
yeah,
that
right.
they didn't know how to handle it.
Okay, so I have a couple. Let's take a quick break here, and when we come back, I want to talk about, so Block Club Chicago, everything we just talked about was the success of DNA Info. This is a new venture, and I want to talk about what's going to be similar and what's going to be different with Block Club Chicago than the predecessor DNA Info. In studio tonight, Seamus Toomey, Jen Sabella, Stephanie Lulay. We're having a conversation not just about that, but the future of local news and how we're going to pay for it. That's here in the download tonight. Stay with us. Continuing our conversation here on the download, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're talking Block Club Chicago, new startup news organization here in Chicago that's going to be in full launch in the middle of April. In studio tonight, Jen Sabella, Stephanie Lulay, and Seamus Toomey. All the various titles associated. We'll get to those again. But yeah, before the break, I mean, we were talking about what made DNA Info, and you are all you're alumni of DNA Info. And you all talked about how great that coverage was because you were able to get hyper local and really do things that weren't done before. How is that? Is that essentially just change the masthead? DNA Info's out, Block Club Chicago's in, Seamus?
Pretty much. I mean, basically, that's what our readers told us that they liked. You know, we're trying to get those stories that the other media in town aren't doing. I mean, let's be honest, there's some great media outlets in town and they cover a lot of big stories. But what is missed is the neighborhood stories, you know, the stuff that they are not going to go out and send a TV crew out to and take a risk and you might get some news out of this development meeting. We're more willing to take that risk because we know we're going to get probably a neighborhood story or five.
What are you risking? I mean, I guess what you're risking is there's no news there, and then you've wasted resources in that regard. Is that the risk?
Yeah, exactly, I mean, if you've got two news trucks and you blow one on a snoozer of a story, you know, what are you going to fill right. up the newscast with?
I mean, how often did that happen at DNA Info, where reporters would go out and you would go to something and there really wasn't news there and you didn't have anything to report on?
It was rare because, like, there wasn't a too small, really. Like, to the neighborhood, it matters. Even if it might not matter to the larger audience who's, like, watching the TV news at night, on a neighborhood level, if you subscribe to your newsletter and your Rogers Park newsletter, and it's a Rogers Park meeting, and it's about a, you know, problem house on the corner, and there's a lot of, like, or a restaurant that got shut down because of mm-hmm. roaches or mm-hmm. whatever, you care, because that's, like, a restaurant you visit. So it's something that, yeah, not a major outlet might pick up, but people who live there care about it. So we rarely skipped or did nothing on a meeting we covered, even if it was just a small story.
What I loved about DNA Info, and I think a lot of people have responded to this in the same way, hearing about Block Club Chicago, was the mass that you guys could create. I mean, to be able to cover Chicago in the way you did, and be able to for me to be sent links from people who are like, did you see this story? And it'd be Auburn Gresham. Then, did you see this story? Is Albany Park. Did you see this story, you know, out in the west side? As you talk about resources, and we're going to get to that conversation, obviously the scope in which DNA Info worked was much larger than what you guys have been able to at least at the startup, have. How do you do what DNA Info did, where there's a mad rush to cover everything and do it in a very crystallized, formatable way when you don't have the resource?
Well, I think to start, you know, we want to keep our reporters assigned by geography, assigned by neighborhood, right? And I think we are going to be smaller starting up, and we're being kind of brutally honest about that. We're starting with six neighborhood reporters. We were starting with five because of the Kickstarter. Thank you, readers. We are able to hire six reporters full-time, which is amazing. Will make such a difference. This is smaller. We have big plans to grow, but we want to grow sustainably. You know, we don't have a billionaire backing us this time.
Yeah, and I guess the question would just be, how do you choose? I mean, if you're going to have six reporters covering six areas of Chicago, What goes into the thought process of what neighborhoods are on the blueprint to begin, and which neighborhoods might be second or third once the money comes in?
We just tried to be representative. So we wanted to make sure to have some neighborhoods on the south side covered, some neighborhoods on the west side covered, a little north side, you know, a little central. And we also went by our reporters who were, you know, really the most familiar faces in their neighborhoods, you know, like Elisa Hauser in Wicker Park.
Yeah, right.
You know, everyone knows her. She works out of the furniture shop on Milwaukee Avenue. She's covered the neighborhood for 12 years. That's someone we knew we had to have on board. And in terms of the places we are missing out on, we have a amazing batch of freelancers. And as soon as we went live, our inboxes were flooded with people. And we've definitely set aside a budget to have, like, a robust freelance budget. So we have, like, a pretty amazing, like, almost every neighborhood that was covered by DNA, there's a freelancer and some who has offered to contribute stories. So it won't be as many as DNA was putting out.
Would it be the same concept that each day that you go to Block Club Chicago, there would be stories at the, if not the volume, but the quality of DNA Info, where every day it flipped over and there was new stuff like a newspaper? I mean, it was even set up like a newspaper. Is it the same concept you're talking about when you deliver this stuff, that people can rely on Block Club Chicago each and every day? Or are you thinking more like maybe The Reader or other places where it's a little bit more, they know there's a deadline on a Thursday and there's some stuff that's going to trickle out, but it's not, the relationship with the reader is not check in every morning at 6 a.m.
No, we're going to keep pumping it out. I mean, we're going to have a morning newsletter. It's going to be loaded, hopefully, with all exclusive stuff. We're going to, you know, we hardly ever hold any story, you know, just for too long, because, you know, part of our model is, you know, we want to be first. You know, if you're the first person to write about some big scoop, you know, that's the one that gets shared. That's when everyone talks about. So even if it means, you know, let's get out one sentence about, you know, some famous theater is mm-hmm. on fire. Let's, you know, we don't need to throw in all the background right away. Let's just say the theater's on fire, you know, come back later. So no, we're going to be busy, absolutely. We have fewer reporters, fewer editors, so it is going to be, you know, a little less volume. I mean, we were probably writing 40-50 stories a day at DNA Info.
That's crazy.
And, you know, there were, some of them were big, some of them were small, a lot of them were small, some of them were, like Jen said before, maybe like the coat drive. But you know what, you know,
well, that it's competitive was a good story. I mean, sometimes when you think about it, it's competitive with the dailies. I mean, we've seen there's been a shrinking landscape when it comes to how many stories are written per day. I think it's clear. I remember a couple of years ago looking at how many stories were put out by each daily, and it was in the 75 to 100 area that was being put out. So to be in that same space, that's a tall order for a small staff.
Yeah, and we also, you know, we always tried to get the quirky stories as well. You know, the ones that, honestly, like the ones that I kind of liked, you know, where someone would want to go like, oh my god, did you see that, like that, you know, that person, like, I've been talking about that guy in the corner for years and someone finally asked him what his deal is, you know, that sort of stuff. That honestly, the other media, we always heard from them how they would come and read our stuff in the morning and figure out, you know, what would be there, some of the stories they would follow up
for the three of you. And we're now a half hour into this convo, so we can get real. That's got to be daunting. Right. I mean, I there's parts of me that feel like I can never go back now. Like if I stopped doing this show and I didn't have the ability to prep every night for 4 hours or whatever it's going to be, I would be lost. I'd be a lost soul. But at the same time, I also understand how stressful it is. And I find that's a stressful venture, DNA Info was. So for you guys to jump back in and start up form, are you concerned at all about the stress level and what it takes to get this job done?
I don't think so. I mean, I was there 6 months before DNA Info launched, so I helped carve out the beats and hire everyone. And I was there when we were building up, you know, a backlog of stories to go live for launch. And it's just as exciting as it was then, but I feel like we know better now. I mean, we know the stories that we're not going to do now, that mm-hmm. didn't perform well, or that the people in the neighborhoods didn't like. We also know better. We're not going to chase anyone. We're going to do our own stories. And I think that's the big part about DNA that made us stand apart is if we're putting out 40 or 50 stories a day, they weren't stories you find on every other news channel or news website in town. We were unique.
And you had to learn that as an organization after years of saying, oh, geez, you know, people are gravitating to this, maybe not to the same story that everybody's talking about.
Right. It's a crowded space. And we're not like ignorant to that. But it's to stand out and to get people to pay for your content, it has to be unique. It has to be original. It has to be something they can't get 9,000 other places.
Yeah. Jen Sabella, Stephanie Lulay, Seamus Toomey in studio tonight. We'll take a quick break. We'll get an update on tonight's news. I know there's flooding in the area. We'll come back. And then let's talk about how we're going to pay for this, how this is all going to go, how you guys see this business plan working out, and how we can help, but how Block Club Chicago looks to sustain itself, especially not just this, but also in the wake of what we've seen hyperlocal and local neighborhood news sites go through in the last 5 to 10 years. So we'll have that conversation here on The Download, so stay with us. Thanks, Rob. Download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman in studio tonight, Block Club Chicago. We're having a good conversation about how we see the future of local news, especially when we're covering Chicago neighborhoods. In studio tonight, Seamus Toomey, he is the editor-in-chief, Stephanie Lulay, who's the managing editor, and Jen Sabella, who's the director of strategy for Block Club Chicago, which just put out a Kickstarter when they announced that they were taking over. Essentially, these are three former DNA Info editors who have moved on to start their own news operation. And they put out a Kickstarter just at the beginning. They wanted to raise $25,000. And they still have 15 days left, and they're at $139,000, which says a lot about commitment, loyalty, readership, and news consumers, which I guess is where we're at right now. How do you see this working out? I mean, you're going to go with a subscription series, right? You're going to go with the idea that if I want the news that you guys are producing at the neighborhood level, I got to pay for it.
That's right. You know, what one of the lessons we learned at DNA Info was people liked us, but there's only so many, you know, pennies you can round up on banner ads and such to really fund, you know, a good professional newsroom. So that is a really, really long road. So we want to flip it around. We said, let's go right to the people that appreciate us, that get value out of us, and say, hey, is this worth $4.99 a month to you? If so, sign up, you know, sign up for a year, buy subscriptions for people that you think would benefit from this that maybe can't afford it. And, you know, let's find out. I mean, we had enough people that told us after we closed that, hey, if you just asked us, we would have paid. And we're like, Now we're asking.
How do you set yourself apart? I mean, because right now you're going to have the Tribune. Sometimes it's free right now, but I mean, the Tribune, the Washington Post, New York Times, all the way down the line, Cranes here in Chicago. Everyone has really moved and are moving more rigidly to a subscription model. How do you guys set yourself apart? Does it have to be the reporting?
I think absolutely. And I think it's exclusive content that is focused on the neighborhoods. You know, most of the stories you got at DNA Info, you would not see anywhere else. Maybe a day or two later, you'd see them other places. But we were constantly breaking stories. And I really have to say that that's because of the strength of our reporters, knowing their neighborhood so well, always being out, always beating the pavement, and people trust them. That's mm-hmm. why they get these great stories time and time again.
All right, Jen. So you and I have had this conversation. I feel like we've had this conversation our whole careers. But how do you, when we think about it, I mean, obviously doing the subscription series, there is some goof. I just think about the past of news, where we've had a lot of local sites try to take this on and have failed, and or had done valiant work and weren't able to keep the keep it up and running. But my big question is, where did this all go wrong? Because at some point or another, I was paying 35 cents for a Sun Times. Before the internet came along, I was paying 50 cents for a Tribune. And now you're in this situation where people almost have this expectation that they're supposed to get their news for free. It's the internet. I can get my news wherever I want. If there's a paywall, I'll go somewhere else. How do you, I mean, let's talk about it. I mean, how do you get past the mistakes of the news business past?
I know I was saying before, I've been ranting about this for so many years. News outlets, major news organizations did not care about the internet. They did not pay attention when it was coming. When I was at the Sun Times, I was like, hey, I'm working overnights. Let me publish news. And they were like, oh, no, you're just going to, you know, just do your just report and let's not show it to anyone. and, you know, that's what it was. And when you're not paying attention, like, to this giant thing that's happening around you, they were just like, let's just throw it on. Okay, we have that guy in the corner over there. He's a nerd. He knows what the internet is. Let him put the news stories on it. And let's just keep doing our print and selling our ads. And another thing about that makes us different is there aren't any ads. Your computer isn't going to shut down because you have 45 pop-ups crashing your browser. And I think that user experience is huge for people who want to be willing to pay for news. I mean, I think of like ad-free. Like, I mean, you pay for Spotify and you pay the extra few bucks to not have the ads on Spotify or whatever other subscriptions you have monthly. And I do think that's another thing that's happening now. And we're kind of coming at a time where people are like, okay, this is something unique that I value and that I'll pay for it. So I think listening to the audience, keeping up on innovations, keeping up on how people are consuming news, mm-hmm. bringing it to them where they are. We knew that Facebook was a huge draw of traffic for us. Facebook was a giant priority for us. And that's why so many of our stories went viral. And newsletters. Like, we decided to try out these like neighborhood specific newsletters. At first I was like, these are too small. Like, no one's going to want this. We just have to do one big newsletter. And I couldn't have been more wrong about that. Like, people loved the very, very local Facebook pages and newsletters. And we just kept listening to our audience. And so I think that is, you know, the future of news is listen to people and don't think that because of you did something this way for 100 years, you have to keep doing it this way.
Well, Seamus, I mean, the past mistakes of the news business, you know, especially the print moving into digital, has given this idea almost like I feel like they're drug dealers in the way that they're like, hey, have this stuff for free, take it free. Someday we're going to make you pay for it. And it's created this strange thing that news consumers feel like they're supposed to, it's their right, it's the internet, they should get it for free. How, I mean, do you see that? I don't understand how, I mean, because I get the concept that I need to become a subscriber, but I'll be the first to say that I also have that in me where I'm like, I know I can get this for free somewhere else.
Right. I mean, we all like free. I mean, free is, you know, we'll always look for free first, but if something is given to you and then taken away and you're like, there's a void here in my, you know, my news life. I no longer know about what's happening, you know, in the, you know, right down my block. You know, we're gambling on the idea that, you know, that they are going to go back and say, all right, you got me. And I can't find it anywhere else. It's like, I can't just look for an aggregation of a Block Club Chicago story. It's the first time I've done that. you know, because oftentimes, you know, it's just not going to be out there. You know, the other places aren't going to care about, you know, the new coffee shop, you know, in Ravenswood or wherever. But so, I mean, if there's nowhere to steal it from, you know, they're going to maybe have eventually come to us, because people, you know, honestly, people like to know something that their neighbors don't know. And that's what we're really selling to them. We're going to tell you something about your neighborhood that other people don't know yet. And then you get to be the smartest guy in the block.
Yeah, I wonder. I think it's amazing to think about where we're at. And I think about what we saw with the end of DNA Info. And also a lot of other companies that have fallen by and who were original indigenous digital news providers, right? A lot of the idea of one benefactor or millionaires and billionaires being able to fund this went awry, where they said, I'm not making enough money out of this thing. I'm out, right? And that was taken away from communities and from journalists' work. You've seen others where they've tried different ways to use ads, advertising. You've seen the floor fall out on digital advertising, and it affects a lot of the local guys. So the question is, what makes you guys in position right now to capitalize on user habits, on the status of digital media, where we're at, just the overall? Do you feel like you could do this today and you couldn't do it 5 years ago? You couldn't do it 7 years ago? What makes you confident that Block Club Chicago will do the things that, say, the news co-op couldn't?
I think we're seeing, you know, attitudes about paying for the news change in real time. And, you know, in a lot of ways, this isn't a new thing. Like, you brought up newspaper subscriptions, or we've talked about supporting your public broadcast station, right? People have chipped in those ways for a long time. But in terms of paying for news on the internet, we are seeing a shift in attitude, I think. And we hope that we can capitalize on that.
Yeah. I wonder, you know, you mentioned public broadcasting. They do the pledge drive. Everyone loves a pledge drive. You can get a tote bag, the whole bit, right? But you're seeing more and more other areas, and I think of music and arts and other places where they're going direct to their fans. We've had a lot of conversations from musicians on this program where saying, hey, we kickstarted the new record. People paid for it, and that's how we were able to pay for studio costs. You think that there's a future of crowdfunding the news? Do you think that that could be a way to take from what public radio has done for 30 some odd years and bring the pledge drive to the internet and be able to source and fund things like Block Club Chicago?
Definitely. I mean, I'm kind of obsessed with the public radio model, but we have tote bags for our Kickstarter subscribers. That was very important to us.
That's obsessed. Yeah.
Yeah. I always loved it. It always made me feel like, I mean, it's something that I listen to every day and I felt like a part of it. And I was, you know, getting a mug or a tote bag is kind of fun and you feel like you're part of it. And I think for what we're doing, being a neighborhood news site, being a Block Club, I think like membership just makes so much sense. Like really like feeling like a sense of belonging. And so many people we've talked to since DNA shut down said, you know, I was able to text a reporter. I was able to, for the first time in my life, I had access to a reporter. So if something was going on, I could actually call someone up and tell them about it. And that just doesn't really exist anymore. Everyone's, you know, on Twitter and it just seems like so far away, or in a downtown newsroom, it seems far away from somebody, you know, in Inglewood. But we, our reporters really got to know people in the neighborhoods and developed relationships with them. And I think that that's something people are willing to, you know, $5 a month, that's pretty measly. I mean,
Put on our business hats and just the question, you're going to have points in this. This is a startup. And a lot of times people get into the media business because they want to make a profit. And that's it. I mean, look at all of the way our newspapers have changed hands and continue to change hands. Our media companies, people see this as a profitable venture. That's why billionaires got involved in the first place, right? Yeah. They see this as an investment. So in your model, you're not necessarily looking to make a profit. How is yours different than, say, some of the online, the Gawkers and the other places that have come through and done things differently but still fit into the news category?
Yeah, and you know, we're not here to say that trying to make a profit is a bad idea. I mean, America's built on it. But we made a decision early on that, listen, our main goal here is to be sustainable. Like, we don't want to be back out on the street in a year. Like, how can we find a way to pay reporters a good wage, tell people what's going on in their neighborhoods and keep it going for years to come. So we made the decision early on, let's structure it as a nonprofit. Any money that comes in, we're going to put it right back into the business. We are going to go out to charitable foundations that support this sort of thing and ask them for contributions. We're going to go directly to our readers for donations. We're going to ask for subscriptions. You know, we're going to try to set up as many different revenue streams as possible because we have a theory about how many people may subscribe in the first couple of years, but we still need to prove that out. So in the meantime, we're hoping to build up some other revenue streams. Tote bags, is that what we're going to sell those for?
Yeah.
No, those are free if you contribute. But, you know, other things, we've got a backer out in New York that's hugely interested in us proving that sustainable journalism is out there. They're building the platform for us and for some other newsrooms around the country. They're playing a role in some of our initial funding. We've got a lot of different ways to fund it, and we're but we're also confident that along the way that it's going to be the readers themselves that are going to really, do most of the revenue.
Okay, my last question tonight. You know, there's been so much made about the crumbling community, right? Not knowing our neighbors, not understanding where we live, not having pride in where we live. We saw that kind of play out in the 2016 election where that was kind of seized upon. That there needs to be more about the good old days of remembering where we're from and the communities that we're from. For you guys being at DNA Info and Block Club Chicago to be able to hear the calls that, oh, it's not like it used to be, communities aren't the same, you don't know your neighbors, everything is deteriorating, to the actual, you know, the work that you guys do on the ground level to be able to report on said communities, is it accurate? I mean, are we in a position where we're less of a community than we ever have been, or is that a misnomer? And through your guys' editing and reporting, you've seen otherwise.
We've definitely seen otherwise. I mean, just in the last few weeks, us driving around the city, doing meetings with different people, whether it's looking at office spaces or just like hearing people out or meeting reporters, just the stories we see and the sense of community we see. We met a lot with Jamal Cole from My Block, My Hood, My City, and just the community that he creates down in Chatham. And we were just in a co-working space up on the Northwest side, and it was just amazing. There were like 1,000 stories. We were like, oh my God, we were like, need to write all of this down immediately. But it just showed so much community. It was people who all, like, they all decided we're going to work together because there's no one doing this, and there's an accountant over there, and there's a designer over there, and they're all like neighbors helping each other make, like, be entrepreneurs, and they're all helping each other out and coming together. And those are the types of stories we told at DNA, and I think that those stories are so ignored in especially national media about Chicago, and Chicago is so demonized. So I think people are fed up with that false narrative, and we hope to tell the real stories of Chicago.
All right. Stephanie Lulay, Jen Sabella, Seamus Toomey, they are Block Club Chicago. Look for it coming up, a formal launch in the middle of April. You guys, I can't thank you enough for coming out. The Kickstarter is still up. 15 more days. They've raised $139,000 to a goal of $25,000. That's good even by public radio standards. You guys, thank you very much for coming in and being my guest tonight at the big table.
Thank you. And blockclubchicago.org if you want to give to that Kickstarter.